Here's a look at our top stories this hour. The military wing of the Palestinian Hamas movement claims responsibility for the retaliatory operation in an Israeli settlement, saying it will not be the last of its kind. The Saudi prince says Riyadh feels cold let down by Washington in tackling security threats to the kingdom, citing U.S. decision to end support for Saudi-led war in Yemen. Also, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says sanctions imposed on Russia over the war in Ukraine will not be lifted until Moscow reaches a peace agreement with Kiev. Thank you for joining us. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas claims responsibility for the retaliatory operation conducted on Friday in an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank. Azzedine Al-Ghassam Brigade says the operation was a response to the regime's aggressions against Al-Aqsa Mosque and Palestinian worshippers. The group said it takes pride in this operation, which was carried out by its fighters. Hamas's military wing added that its forces are fighting along with other resistance forces across the occupied territories. Azzedine Al-Ghassam Brigades warned that the Friday operation will not be the last of its kind. On Friday, an Israeli guard was killed in aerial settlement situated near the city of Nablus. Earlier the same day, Israeli forces had attacked Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied East Al-Quds, leaving at least 42 fasting Palestinians injured. Israel has escalated its aggressions against Muslims' third holiest site in recent weeks. A senior Saudi prince criticizes the U.S. in tackling what he calls security threats to the kingdom and the region by Yemen's Ansarullah movement. Prince Turki Al-Faisal said Saudi Arabia felt let down at a time it thought both sides would jointly face the danger. He was referring to Yemeni missile and drone attacks. The former Saudi spy chief also cited a U.S. decision to end its support for a Saudi-led offensive in Yemen. He went on to list U.S. President Joe Biden's refusal last year to meet Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his move to temporarily withdraw anti-missile systems from the kingdom. Relations between Riyadh and Washington remain tense over a number of issues, including the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Saudi consulate in Turkey. The U.S. is also angry as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have resisted calls to help tame oil prices amid the Russia-Ukraine war. The Iranian president has called on Muslim countries to make every effort to stop inhumane Israeli attacks on Palestinians. Ibrahim Raisi said that the goal can be achieved through cooperation and tapping into international capacities. The Iranian president made the remarks in a phone call with his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Raisi said Iran's policy is to, quote, meaningfully promote all-out ties with regional countries, particularly Turkey. For his part, the Turkish president expressed his keenness to travel to Tehran. Erdogan said he would like to discuss regional and international developments as well as the expansion of Tehran-Ankara ties during the visit. The family of an Iranian national on trial in Sweden for alleged rights abuses have told Press TV about his dire situation. They say Hamid Nouri, a retired employee of the Iranian judiciary, was humiliated, beaten, and denied access to medical services. Swedish prosecutors have requested life imprisonment for Nouri over allegations of human rights violations against members of the anti-Iran terror group Mujahideen Khalq back in the 1980s. His family says his arrest was illegal. They accused the Swedish judicial system of issuing an arrest warrant for him without an independent investigation and based on untrue claims by some people. Nouri's wife laments that Swedish officials didn't allow them to even meet him for nearly 2 years after his arrest. On Sunday, Iran's foreign ministry summoned the Swedish ambassador to protest the detention and trial of Nouri. The ministry said it considers Nouri's detention illegal and based on propaganda by the anti-Iran terror group MKO. The ministry rejected allegations against Nouri as baseless and described his trial as political show. The MKO is responsible for killing some 12,000 Iranian people and officials in the 1980s, including the country's then president and prime minister. Another instance of Quran burning has erupted in Sweden as a notorious racist activist from Denmark continues his Quran burning tour of Sweden. Fears are high of a return to the 4 days of violence, which saw furious Muslims vent their anger at authorities over the Easter weekend burnings. Robert Carter is in Stockholm and brings us the latest.
Quran burnings have once again returned to Sweden as far-right Danish activist Rasmus Paludan desecrated the holy book outside Stockholm's central masjid on Sunday. Later that same day, he travelled to Uppsala and attempted to burn another, but local Muslims chased him off, one nearly being run over in the process. Paludan is a notorious leader of a far-right political party which stood in the last Danish elections, receiving just 1.8% of the vote, failing to win a seat. In 2020, he was jailed for racism and other offences. Throughout the month of Ramadan, Paludan has toured Sweden, burning Qurans in several Muslim-majority areas in various cities, sparking 4 days of violent unrest over the Easter weekend. Local Swedish opposition Nuance Party condemned the authorities for allowing the burnings.
Well, actually, in Sweden, you're not allowed to say or do whatever you want. So this concept of freedom of speech is already has its rules and its regulations. For example, 3 years ago, a neo-Nazi party burnt the Pride flag, the flag that the LGBT movement uses. And for that, they were charged for hate speech or hate against a certain people. Nowadays, the politicians, they don't account Muslims into these kind of minorities. On one hand, they're defending other minorities and their rights to be left alone or to not be hated against. And on the other hand, they are defending people who are hating it towards or against Muslims.
There's no word to describe our disappointment to the other political parties and the public figures that are defending him. We don't see any political parties that are going out and defending the Muslims and that are talking about issues that facing Muslims. So I think that is why this is happening.
Peace and tranquility has returned to Sweden, but tensions remain high as both local Muslims and the Swedish authorities know that the Quran burners will be back. Paludan has made absolutely clear that he intends to run in the Swedish elections this September, and it's very likely that he will bring further unrest back with him. Robert Carter, Stockholm.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says sanctions imposed on Russia over the Ukraine war will not be lifted until Moscow reaches a peace agreement with Kiev. Scholz said Russia is mistaken if it thinks it can gain territory from Ukraine and then stop the war. The German Chancellor said Russian President Vladimir Putin underestimated the resistance of Ukraine. Scholz added that Putin didn't think that the West would support Ukraine to the current extent. He said it is for Ukraine to determine the terms of any peace agreement. Scholz also rejected criticism over Germany's delayed military aid to Ukraine. Scholz is under pressure at home and abroad to supply Ukraine with heavy arms and support EU sanctions on Russia's energy imports. Daily requests for Russian gas deliveries to Europe through Ukraine have hit a five-month high despite tensions over the war in Ukraine. That's according to data from a transmission system operator in Slovakia. The data shows even the Russian gas to Germany via the Nord Stream 1 showed an increase on Monday. Meanwhile, EU energy ministers held an emergency meeting to discuss a Russian threat of halting natural gas exports unless European countries make their payments in rubles. Moscow has already cut off supplies to Bulgaria and Poland due to their refusal to pay in rubles. This, as a Hungarian official says, at least 10 EU countries are already buying Russian gas with rubles. The EU Commission, however, says it is not aware of any company agreeing to comply with the Russian demand.
We don't have any information that this is true. On the contrary, right now, Commission doesn't have information about any country or private company who is willing to do so.
The EU official also dismissed the option of paying for Russia's gas in rubles through a conversion scheme managed by Moscow. She called it a breach of the bloc sanctions, which is not acceptable. She made the remarks during the EU energy ministerial meeting in Brussels. The European Commission is expected to propose a sixth package of sanctions against Russia over its war with Ukraine later this week. The package will include a ban on Russian oil imports. Germany says it's ready to support the embargo, but has warned that such a move would require a lot of preparations. The European Union imports 40% of its natural gas and 26% of its crude oil from Russia. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has paid an unannounced visit to Kiev and the latest show of support for Ukraine in its fight against Russia by a senior Western politician. The U.S. and its allies have supplied significant quantities of arms to Kiev and imposed economic sanctions on Russia. But such approaches were not only unhelpful to put an end to the war, but also proved fuel to the fire.
Leading a congressional delegation, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has paid a visit to Ukraine. Pelosi, who is the highest-ranking American leader to visit Ukraine since the start of the war, has reiterated Washington's support for Ukraine. During a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, she vowed that the U.S. would stand by Ukraine until the end of the war with Russia.
We believe that we are visiting you to say thank you for your fight for freedom, that we are on a frontier of freedom, and that your fight is a fight for everyone. And so our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
The United States is in an explicit war to weaken Russia and to defeat Russia, to help Ukrainian government defeat Russia in Ukraine. And it's, you know, Zelensky is really is someone who isn't making the decisions here. He's not going to be allowed to make a deal unless the United States lets him, and unless the right-wing forces in Ukraine let him.
Zelensky, for his part, thanked the U.S. and its Congress for, in his own words, the powerful signal of support. Pelosi's visit comes as the U.S. and its allies are stepping up to provide long-term support to Ukraine as the fighting rages on. Later in a statement, Pelosi said Russian President Vladimir Putin's, quote, diabolic invasion had taken a devastating human toll on Ukrainians. She also pledged imminent additional American support for Ukraine. The U.S. has already committed $4.3 billion to Kyiv in military support since 2021. Now, in a major increase of such funding, U.S. President Joe Biden has called on Congress to provide another $33 billion in emergency funding for Ukraine, including $20 billion for military aid. Moscow has warned that the aid would only fuel the conflict. Also, last week, responding to pleas from Zelensky, a group of 40 nations gathered by the U.S. in Germany agreed to streamline and expedite the delivery of weapons to Ukraine. Western nations have imposed broad economic sanctions on Russia and have been shipping increasing quantities of weapons to confront Russian forces. The Western intervention could lead to Russia's military response and raise the risk of confrontation between Russia and NATO, as well as a nuclear conflict. Some experts believe Washington's war aims had broadened from helping Ukraine to defend itself to damaging Russia itself. This notion supports the Russian narrative that Moscow's actions in Ukraine are to defend itself against NATO.
Russia, meanwhile, has hit a U.S. weapons warehouse at an airfield near Odessa, which also housed Western-supplied arms and ammunition. At the same time, it is threatening to retaliate if other countries target its soil. These developments show there's no end in sight to the war. This also as Russia and Ukraine have failed to reach a consensus in their peace talks.
U.S. President Joe Biden has proposed a $33 billion package for arming and supporting Ukraine. He also outlined proposed new laws to transfer the frozen assets of Russia's elite to Ukraine. The proposal is part of U.S. policies to ratchet up economic pressure on Russia over the Ukraine war. On the other hand, Moscow has warned that it may seize the Russian-based assets of countries it considers hostile. The Speaker of Russia's lower house of parliament says the proceeds from the sale of these assets will be used for the country's development. Vyacheslav Volodin, accused some countries of violating international law and resorting to pure theft. He particularly named Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, and even the United States. Volodin said the U.S. has set a dangerous precedent that could backfire. Meanwhile, Russia's defense ministry said on Sunday it had carried out a missile strike on a military airfield near the port city of Odessa, destroying a runway and a hangar containing weapons and ammunition supplied to Ukraine by the U.S. and European countries. That's after Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov warned that any shipment of weapons by NATO into Ukraine would be a legitimate target for Russia. Lavrov had also blamed Ukraine for the current impasse in the peace talks, accusing Kyiv of a desire to play games. He said the negotiations could have produced results if it was not for the interference of the United States and Britain.
Are they willing to go all in a war against Russia here? They are going to have to put massive amounts of weaponry in. And the Russians are going to try to prevent that. So we are in a very dangerous place where there's a significant possibility of not only a regional, but a world war.
Moscow has also blasted the West for encouraging Ukraine to strike Russia. That's after UK Defense Minister Ben Wallace said Ukraine has the right to strike military targets inside Russia. Meanwhile, the Russian President Vladimir Putin said earlier that any country deemed to be interfering in Ukraine would meet a lightning-fast response using weapons.
A senior U.S. official says Russia plans to, quote, annex the two eastern regions of Ukraine after failing to overthrow the Kiev government. The U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe said Russia plans to engineer referenda in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions sometime in mid-May. Michael Carpenter said, highly credible reports indicate that Russia is considering a similar plan in Ukraine's Kherson region, which is now under its control. It said such, quote, sham referenda and attempts to annex additional Ukrainian territory will not be considered legitimate. In addition to Donetsk and Luhansk regions, the U.S. and its allies consider Russia's annexation of the Crimean Peninsula following a 2014 referendum illegal.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Thanks for staying with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
The blessings of Eid al-Fitr. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. Heartiest congratulations to our dear listeners on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr. May God accept your fast and all other acts of worship for the blessed month of Ramadan. Please stay with us for a special feature on this occasion. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, by the command of God Almighty, designated the first of Shawwal as Eid al-Fitr, on which the faithful give as charity to the poor the fitriye, which for each person is 3 kilograms of staple food eaten during Ramadan, such as wheat, rice, or dates. Most people give the equivalent in money of the said figure for the benefit of the poor sections of the society. The Prophet's first infallible successor, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, in one of his sermons on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, has compared this great with the day of resurrection, saying that after a month of fasting, the virtuous are rewarded by God on this day, while the disobedient become disappointed. The Imam says that our loving Creator forgives the past sins of those who had been obedient to his commandments. Imam Ali, peace upon him, cautions the believers against the waywardedness and exhorts them to properly think of the future so as to spend the rest of the year in obedience to the commandments of God Almighty. The ulema and scholars of Islam, in line with the teachings of the Prophet and the infallible Imams of the Ahl al-Bayt, have elaborated on the importance of this day. For instance, the late Gnostic Mirza Jawad Agha Malaki Tabrizi, who passed away a century ago and for decades taught ethics at the Islamic Seminary in Holy Najaf, Iraq, and later in Qom, Iran, during the Constitutional Revolution, has said about Eid al-Fitr, "It is the day chosen by God to grant gifts to his servants by giving them the opportunity of supplicating in the divine court for forgiveness of sins, solution to their problems, and seeking fulfillment of their lawful, legal, and rational wishes. God's promise is true, and he grants them much more than they could imagine." He has also said that one should abstain from sins and a life of ignorance that deprives them of the spiritual bounties of God. He, however, has cautioned the people against the despondency or a feeling of despair, saying that on the day of Eid al-Fitr, the mercy of God engulfs even those that had not properly observed the rules of fasting or may have sinned in the month of Ramadan out of weakness of character. And if such people repent and seek forgiveness on the day of Eid al-Fitr, Almighty Allah would forgive them. As for those who observed piety and strictly adhered to the rules of fasting and commandments of God during Ramadan, the reward on the day of Eid al-Fitr is manifold, and the All-Merciful Lord appreciates their good deeds, further opens the doors of guidance for them, affords them more opportunities to do good, and places them amongst his selected servants. In view of these facts, the best group of believers is that which has experienced the sweetness of God's favors by responding to his invitation to fast and to strive for attaining the proximity of the Lord Most High. The reward reserved for such people in afterlife is perpetual bliss as well as blessings that none can imagine and which no eyes have seen. Ramadan, with all its glories, has come to its end, but on a tragic note, especially for the people of Gaza who are being subjected to genocide by the Zionists. The world is watching in silence as men, women and children are being massacred. In Afghanistan, the godless Takfiri terrorists are making life miserable for Muslims. Under the circumstances, it is our duty to pray for the deliverance of Muslims worldwide on the day of Eid al-Fitr all over the world, including in India, where anarchist elements are openly calling for genocide of monotheists. As taught by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Muslims on the day of Eid al-Fitr gather in vast multitudes to offer the special 2 rak'at Eid prayer, which is obligatory under certain conditions, and its time is sunrise till noon. It is prayed in congregation. Women are exempted from this prayer, but if they are inclined, there is no restriction for them to pray. We present you the translation of the Qunut supplication of the Eid prayer. O Allah, Lord of magnificence and greatness, and Lord of generosity and overwhelming power, and Lord of pardon and mercy, we implore you for the sake of this day, which you have appointed as a festival for the Muslims and for Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and his progeny as a reminder, a distinction, an honor. So bless Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad and admit me to all the bounties to which you have admitted Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, and keep me away from all evils from which you have kept away Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad. May your blessings be upon him and his progeny. I beg of you of the best which has been asked for by your virtuous good servants, and I seek your protection from all those evils from which your sincere servants have sought your protection.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and here is what Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, told her loving husband, the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, on her deathbed. Let my death not dishearten you. You have to serve Islam and humanity for a long time to come. And let not my sufferings embitter your life. Please promise me, O Ali.
Congratulations to all world Muslims with the arrival of the blessed Eid al-Fitr, marking the end of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. Our felicitations to all Muslims throughout the world.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajum. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. We are looking at human justice, and we are looking at it from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful. Now, we spoke about how Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam valued justice itself, and how he stood against oppression and how he grieved with the oppressed. We want to look at the value of life from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. Because at the end of the day, human rights itself and justice and all these concepts, they would not exist if life did not exist, or human beings, like their life, was not present at all. We live at an age where life seems to have a less value by the day. We're living in a world where wars are constantly happening. People are constantly dying. There's not a day that goes by without people being bombarded by bombshells and being killed on a daily basis. And the whole world just watches and does not care at all. I mean, obviously, to be fair, not all, but the majority of the world doesn't seem to be care. In fact, when it comes to the matter of death and life, it became also a source of joy for a lot of people. Where, for example, if you look at Hollywood and the media mechanism behind it, they seem to make death sound very interesting, rather very entertaining. Because when you see all these action movies, hundreds of people get killed in it, and, you know, presumptuously or assuming that they are bad people. But people being killed, and it doesn't seem to affect us when we see so much death happening on the screen on at least movies. Even they brought that notion that life has no value in terms of making it a game for little kids. And kids, you know, they don't understand much of these things. They just want to, you know, entertain themselves. So they play these games where they're constantly killing people. As they grow older and older, life, and it has no value to them anymore, which is sad. And that's why you see an increasing amount of crime and killing happening around the world, because now we're trying to glorify the loss of life. You know, if you're looking at games, how much people you kill, you get a lot of stars. When you watch movies, the more people get killed in an action movie, the more entertaining it is. And when you see kids and families being, their lives being torn apart by wars, it doesn't seem to affect us anymore. So pretty much we can conclude to the fact that life itself has no value anymore. And that is very sad, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He created humanity based on the fact that they are living creatures and life itself is sacred in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and it needs to be preserved. Let's take a short break and then we will continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Now, going back to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and his universal concept of human rights. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he himself has helped people to acquire their rights and made them recognize what was due to them, because a lot of people are unaware what their rights are and how to acquire them. Where he paved the way and he told them what their rights are and how they should go upon seeking it and getting it. Also, Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, he also shared their hardship with them. And he shared the hardship with the indigent and the deprived, and so that he needs to feel the value of human rights and justice from their perspective, because when a person is sitting high on his throne and far away from the people, he can't really understand the suffering of people. And that's a problem that we face today when we look at the systems that we live under. It's oppressive systems clothing itself with democracy and freedom, where in fact all these systems fail to preserve life or human rights for its citizens and for the people of the world. So when we look at the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, we get to see all these principles and how he have made every effort to create a sense of belonging and a sense that every human being should be treated equally, regardless of their race, regardless of their color. He laid a new foundation through his work and through his sermons, through his eloquence, through his jurisprudence, through his social science, and so on and so forth. He laid the foundation for human rights and the value of life itself. And you get to see how Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, in many of his sermons, especially when he goes to battle, where it is Safin, where it is the camel, or where it is Nahrawan, he never initiates war, and he says we need to come to terms and seek a peaceful outcome, because I don't want be blood to be shed. Despite the fact that you guys are my enemies, despite the fact that you guys are corruptors, I don't want to shed blood. There are better ways to solve this and resolve this. So every time he would go to battle, he would send one of his men with the Quran, and he would go to the opposite army, and he says, look, we don't want to be the first to initiate war. We want to have peace. And you can read through history that the opposite army always are the ones who end up shooting arrows at the messengers of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi and initiating war and putting Amir al-Mu'mineen in a position where he has no choice but to start a war. So the life itself was preserved in the sight of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and he looked at it highly. Inshallah, we will look at this topic in furthermore in other episodes. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
These days, it's easier than ever to get lost in the virtual world. A unique museum in the U.S. is using augmented reality for visitors to plug into a thrilling experience about the Earth's environmental challenges. The New York Museum is called Arcadia Earth. It offers a large-scale multisensorial journey through underwater worlds, mountains, savannas, and inspirational fantasy lands. Each exhibit is brought to life through immersive technology and animated by augmented and virtual reality, including projection mapping. One installation is made of 44,000 plastic bags, the amount used in New York every minute before a plastic bag ban was implemented. The museum founder says the goal is to raise awareness about the impacts of climate change in a fun way.
The intention is to inspire people to come and leveraging game and immersive beauty to deliver a message. And I think that if this technique were to be used in school, we will so learn much more and every kid will want to go to school. And at the end of the day, the purpose is just to deliver the message. The tools are just techniques. So I really think that this technique, it's super fun and will work for everyone.
Vittori added that the experience is meant to encourage people to be proactive in protecting the planet. The exhibit also spotlights other environmental challenges such as overfishing and food waste. Proceeds from tickets sold are used to plant mangrove trees. This exhibit has been held in several cities across the United States, and each time proceeds have been used to support various environmental causes. Appearing like something straight out of a sci-fi movie, this Gundam-style robot lifts off special equipment and carries out maintenance work on out-of-reach railway contact lines in Japan. Developed by West Japan Railway Company JR West and two other Japanese companies, the humanoid robot can conduct repair work on overhead wires, which are considered high risk for humans. According to JR West, the prototype of this robot can be controlled by human operators through VR helmets and remote controls. It can lift objects up to 40 kilograms in weight with two hands to a height of 10 meters. It was designed to lower the risk of electrocution and falling for workers. The company says it can cut down human labor by a third. The company has been conducting tests since April and expects to put the robot into full service by early 2024.
A child-sized doll screams and rolls its eyes while lying on a table as engineer Hiroki Takimoto looks on calmly. But instead of being a child's toy, the doll is a humanoid robot mimicking critical medical symptoms designed to train dental workers. The robot was co-developed by Japanese robotics startups Team Sock and a local dental school. Pediaroid was designed to stimulate a child's responses when receiving dental treatment, including changes to its medical condition. Using a tablet programmed with different medical conditions, the user is able to send signals to air cylinders installed within the robot's joints to move its entire body, mouth, and tongue to display physical reactions and facial expressions.
Medical workers really need to experience medical emergencies. It's important that they experience a situation where something goes wrong, and that's what it can simulate. As for the future, we would like to further develop it in such a way that various other people who are involved with childcare, such as mothers, elementary school teachers, childcare workers, and nurses, can experience emergency simulations.
Director of Team Sock's engineering division, Yusuk Ishii, said the robot was developed due to the lack of clinical dental training to treat children. Currently, at a hefty price tag of about 25 million Japanese yen, Team Sock hopes to develop the hyper-realistic robot further such that people from other childcare industries, including pediatricians and elementary school teachers, would be able to use it for other emergency situation training. Iran has hosted an iftar dinner in support of Palestine amid a rise in Israel's violence against Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy month of Ramadan. Yusuf Jalali reports from Tehran. Let's check it out.
Turn the pot over to let the tasty maghluba slip into the dish. Maghluba is a Palestinian upside-down rice, usually cooked with chicken or lamb. Now, these Iranian and Lebanese women have taken part in a group cooking of maghluba as a solidarity gesture with Palestinian women amid the escalation of the Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. They say maghluba is not just a delicious food, but a symbol of the downfall of Israel.
Maghluba is indigenous to the Levant area, such as Lebanon, Syria, and especially Palestine. The last stage of the food's recipe is to run over the pot that contains the food. Today, it has become a symbol of victory for Al-Quds and a defeat for Israel.
Turning over the pot symbolizes the downfall of Israel. Interestingly, Israel has imposed a ban on the entry of pots into Al-Aqsa Mosque since they have come to learn about what it means to turn over the maghluba pots.
Since the start of the month of Ramadan, Israeli forces have been assaulting Muslim worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, injuring scores of people. The escalation in tensions has drawn worldwide condemnation, with protesters calling on the UN to take action to end the regime's crackdown against Palestinians.
Palestine is for Palestinians. Israel has been repeating its barbaric behavior towards Palestinians since 7 decades ago, and today it has taken its violence to another level by doubling down on its use of force. I think they are angered by Palestinians' resistance, and that's why they have resorted to violence.
This humanitarian move is one of tens of solidarity gestures staged in Iran and worldwide in support of Palestinians. The event also comes ahead of the International Quds Day, a global pro-Palestine rally that takes place every year on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan.
Enjoy the maghluba and wish Palestinians good luck in their struggle against occupation. Chefs here say, aside from symbolizing the victory of Al-Quds against occupation, this event seeks to raise awareness of the Palestinians' suffering and to call on other nations to jump on the wagon and voice their support for Palestine's resistance. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
museum in France is hosting treasures of Peru, including the famed Machu Picchu, in a unique experience where technology meets archaeology. Visitors can immerse themselves in a vertical tour of Machu Picchu Citadel and see an exclusive exhibit of Peruvian archaeological objects. The collection is arranged chronologically, passing through the extraordinary diversity of some 13 cultures. The collection displays 200 artifacts spanning 3 millennia, dating as far back as 1500 BC. A large part of the exhibit is dedicated to Peru's Machica civilization with their vase portraits and red ceramics. The museum's curator says the goal was to show that pre-Columbus Peru was far deeper than just the Inca era. Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than 4 decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the U.S. and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turned barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Humans have had an unprecedented impact on land, with vast consequences for climate change, food systems, and biodiversity, a major new UN report concludes. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written jointly by Aruna Gandhraskar and Daisy Dune Writers. This article is published under the heading Human activity altered 70% of Earth's land and degraded 40% of it. Here's the story. Humans have had an unprecedented impact on land, with vast consequences for climate change, food systems, and biodiversity, a major new UN report concludes. It says that human activities have already altered 70% of Earth's land surface, degrading up to 40% of it. Four of the nine planetary boundaries, limits on how humans can safely use Earth's resources, have already been exceeded. Food systems, a catch-all term to describe the way humans produce, process, transport, and consume food, are the largest culprit when it comes to land degradation, the report says. They account for 80% of deforestation, 29% of greenhouse gas emissions, and the leading share of biodiversity loss. The degradation of land is perpetuated by steep inequalities. It notes that 70% of the world's agricultural land is controlled by just 1% of farms, primarily large agribusiness, the report notes. The report from the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification